Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 54. Oh, I better come up with a title. Hold on. I forgot. That's the only part I script is the first part, but I forgot about the title.
Hey, Veeam Community Podcast listeners. Are you new to virtualization and data protection? If so, check out Backup Academy. Veeam has sponsored Backup Academy to provide web-based training and certification resources for virtualization and data protection technologies. We've also launched a new session from Greg Shields, Multi-Site Clustering for Hyper-V Disaster Recovery. Check out this track and more at backupacademy.com.
Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 54, Sorting Out Application Requirements the Real Way. Here we go. Today, my guest is John Walsh. How you doing, John?
Doing good, Rick.
Hey, John, you and I have been hanging around Twitter and places and spaces for a while. Not sure if everyone else knows you so well. You're on Twitter. You engage a lot. But can you give everyone a bio of yourself, where you're from, what you do, and all that stuff?
Sure. Well, I'm the manager of processing and information platform services, and yes, that is a mouthful, for Northwestern University Information Technology and the Cyber Infrastructure Group. So essentially, I'm responsible for anything physical, virtual in the university central data center. So that's the OS level, the hardware level, the enterprise storage, direct attached storage, and also our centralized high performance computing infrastructure. So, you know, got a decent staff, but we definitely stay busy.
Yeah, for sure. I know you're a busy guy, and it all is made cool because you have the word cyber in that description.
Yeah.
So that goes along.
Cyber makes everything better.
right on. So, John, what we're going to talk about today is gathering application requirements. I don't know if this is your experience, but when I was in the business of providing infrastructure for stakeholders, what I had to do was sort out requirements, and it drove me crazy because everybody thought that their application was the most important one, and especially absent of good specs from each application vendor, it was up to the infrastructure team and the application owners to really figure out where this thing fits, right? If we have different tiers of storage, is it a virtualization candidate, all those different things. So kind of as a open-ended topic, I wanted to talk about it with you because I'm sure you've had to deal with it. So let's start with virtualization candidate, right? You know, everybody I'm pretty sure is at the virtual first way of doing business. Is that pretty much where you guys are right now too?
Yeah, we're pretty much at virtualization first, unless, you know, specific workloads definitely still are not great candidates for virtualization. So, you know, we've got certain exceptions for that rule.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. And you know what? As much of the virtualization Kool-Aid I drink, I still think there's stuff that needs to be physical. In fact, my most recent example at the other job was a business intelligence system, right? It built cubes and all this kind of stuff. It was really, really smart stuff. But that's the type of stuff that it just would... It was just killing my virtual environment, right? And this was like the like. So that was a native versus physical comparison. Now, I probably could have, at least if it was today, had some sort of array that was solid state, you know, available to the virtual infrastructure that actually I wouldn't probably have available to physical environments. I might be able to make the case now, but, you know, at the time, it was the right thing to do to go physical. So, in the physical versus virtual, do you still deal with people that are a little bit skeptical of the whole virtual machine thing, or do you really shield them from, you know, where things live in that sense?
We're getting a lot better at shielding people from what's a virtual machine, what's a physical machine. Pretty much the assumption is today it's going to be virtual, and they don't even realize the difference between a physical and virtual machine because they're end-user interfacing. We don't give them vCenter console access, so they're either coming in through remote desktop on Windows servers or SSH for a Linux server. So for their endpoint and their entry point into the system, it looks identical to them. So their user experience doesn't change. They don't necessarily know the difference. A lot of it has to do with, as you said, business intelligence is we've got the test environment and development environment virtualized, mm-hmm. but the production environment, it does basically data warehousing builds and goes out and pull data every night and full refresh of, you know, 15, 20 years worth of data on the weekends. The CPUs just, you know, go crazy on the physical boxes. So that's, you know, that's what we'll look at. If we have high CPU usage or high network I.O., we'll sometimes segregate it off and isolate those workloads to physical boxes.
Whoa.
You know, the
15 to 20 years? I'm my head fell off my desk listening to that, because I thought, you know, year over year, quarter to quarter was a lot of data. But really? Wow.
Well, you got to think it's higher education, and you come in as a student. You know, just one year career for somebody might be 5 years for, you know, 3 to 5 years worth of data. So if they're doing metrics off student enrollment and class history and stuff, you know, it can go back 30, 40 years sometimes. I mean, they've got microfiche archives and paper archives going back to the mid-late 1800s when the university was founded.
Wow. But it's all, you know, encapsulated in a digital form. I guess, you know, there was a whole metadata process associated with that, right? So, or file name or something, so that know what's what.
It's continuously growing how they're doing that data warehousing and the archiving, but there's more and more of it is becoming available online and, you know, in a digital format as opposed to a digitized format.
Yeah, and I think that the big challenge with business intelligence is, I think the expectation is, especially in the commercial segment where my experience is, we've been in this digital era forever, so I want to use all of it in these types of things. And that was an area that was probably the lowest amount of, say, servers and storage installs in my experience, but it was the highest amount of work associated with them, right? Because they really required so much more in BI that it was really a challenge for me on an infrastructure team, right? It was at that point, it was a learning curve for me, first time through it, and stepping back a little bit, knowing a little bit more about infrastructure, especially bigger infrastructures now, and I'm like, wow, that was it was kind of a wild ride, but it never seems to. I think that is really just going to explode, and maybe we'll get to the point where that's like a cloud app, but there's so much data involved that I don't know if I'd ever want to part with it, right, and let it reside elsewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's going to have a strong future with Hadoop-type workflow and analysis is going to really benefit the BI concept and the data warehousing in general.
I don't disagree with you there, because there's In fact, I think, what was I reading? It was the quickest way to a high salary right now, right? There's like five Hadoop positions for every one qualified person or something like that. So if you need a job, think about Hadoop. Learn it. Get on it. So what about different situations where different applications need different OSs that maybe aren't part of your standard repertoire, right? So you might have a couple of distros on Linux that you guys deploy, templates. Same thing with Windows, right? What if somebody comes in with some bizarre OS? How do you handle that?
A lot of cases when the bizarre OSs come in, I mean, first and foremost, you know, over the years we've standardized on what OS builds we support. You know, years ago we were a Solaris, Red Hat, you know, Windows shop. You know, we moved off HP UX and AIX and standardized on the Solaris route. Now we're moving off Solaris and pretty much it's a RHEL flavor of some sort and Windows flavor. Like today, if you're to ask for something, it'd be a RHEL 5 64-bit, RHEL 6 64-bit, or Windows 2008 image deployment. Now, where we do get those deviations are a lot of VApps, or a lot of vendors are starting to deploy appliances. So mm-hmm. In some cases, you're going to be downloading some flavor of a SUSE or CentOS build. Mm-hmm. But a lot of cases, like in the case of Symantec, they deliver an appliance for the antivirus email spam filtering, and they just dumb down the command set. You can't even really get into the shell level and do any Linux functions anymore.
How about the ongoing management of those appliances, right? Do you find that as a burden in terms of patching or updating, or do they, you know, come up on security scans, right? Because that was one of my biggest fears of going the appliance model. In my infrastructure experience, was how do you answer the questions after the fact?
Yeah, a lot of them from, you know, I'm just going to say major vendors today are pretty secure. A lot of cases, they'll actually send you a migration tool to move the data out from one version into another. So you don't actually really update the VApp. You just you know, install that new appliance and migrate data into it and make that the new one.
Mm-hmm.
Other ones will allow you to do more of the OS level patches, but in a lot of cases they've customized the kernels and the packages, so you can't, you know, you can't do like a Debian app get or a yum update or, mm-hmm. you know, any of those other functions. You have to wait until they come up with the patches. But surprisingly enough, we haven't really experienced with vulnerability scans, you know, much of anything on the appliances we're running.
Oh, cool. That's good to hear. I mean, every organization approaches that differently, but that was like one of my concerns about it, but I never really went down the route. A lot of times appliances I use really were kind of an infrastructure toolkit, right? You know, little things that would help me in my VMware environment do stuff, you know, especially a lot of the free tools that let you get some visibility, and that's where my experience was. And I'd turn them off if I'm not using it or when the scan was going on or something like that. That was some of the little tricks I would do. But, okay, well, cool. That's good stuff. What about, you know, deciding on storage placement, right? That's the other thing that, you know, a lot of app specs, I don't know, maybe you know differently, but I found that they weren't really virtualization aware other than they say, yes, we run as a VMware machine or something like virtual machine, but then onward in their storage requirements, they say, you know, RAID 10, direct attached, you know, or some archaic storage requirement, you know, that doesn't really always apply in the virtual space. How do you go about that? You know, do you press the app vendors for more? Do you make a call? Do you reserve the right to move it? I know you've got some magic storage. What kind of things do you do?
Yeah, we do have some magic storage. The Tintree device is wonderful for, you know, some of that stuff. The storage is always a fun thing. I mean, it's been years. You look at database vendors specifically. I'm not going to mention a name, but they'll sit there and say, put this type of data on this volume and make sure it's a mirrored, and this other data goes on this other physical spindle. You know, only recently have they started adapting to RAID groups and the concept of storage pools, et cetera. You know, as a habit, our Oracle Rack environment, we do everything RAID 5.
Yeah.
You know, even though they show RAID 10, you know, we do RAID 5. We show them that we've got enough spindles behind it. We can satisfy the IOPS. And, you know, in our practice, we haven't had problems. Now, there are other applications that we use on the research side for their SQL databases, and they have required RAID 10 direct attached storage.
Really?
With, you know, I've had to put multiple 146 gig 15K drives on it to give them the IOPS they need for the SQL databases.
Wow.
So it really, you got to look at the workload. You have to work with the vendor and understand, are you saying RAID 10 because that's just what you like? Or are you saying RAID 10 because you're trying to deliver this mm-hmm. level of IOPS?
Mm-hmm.
Because the, you know, I know on your podcast and several other ones, people have talked about it. You really got to look at the number of spindles you have and not look at the size of the disk, because, you know, it's like, okay, I can take 2 terabyte, you know, 2 1-terabyte disks, you'd be 4 terabytes in a RAID 1, but the IOPS of that is not going to be as good as if I spread it over 7,346 or 600 gig drives and give you, you know, the whole pool to give you the performance you need.
And
so that...
Yeah, well, the other half of that, though, is how are you going to use the app, right? You know, there might be
exactly
one customer using the app to the extreme and driving RAID 10 to its limits, maybe, yet I may only be using 1 or 2 core features of a product, and then I could get away with, you know, RAID 6.
Yeah, or just, you know, a standard, not even rated, depending on what it is. I mean,
yeah.
typically we do, on the virtual environment, for our standard administrative hosting, we do fiber channel attached SAN-based storage. And pretty much all the VM pools and MUNs are RAID 5. The majority of our storage is Fibre Channel or SAS with data that we can have on SATA. We'll throw over the SATA tier, the file server data, the, you know, the streaming type data that benefits better from SATA, and those are typically like a RAID 6 pool.
Mm-hmm.
Some cases we've done RAID 10 with SATA to get the performance and the density we need from the denser disks.
I think that you know, you've got a good mix of storage, right? You know, you've got all the tiers, including the magic tier. Have you ever found yourself, well, I don't have something that fits in this tier of storage, or it's kind of in-betweener or anything like that? Do you ever have those types of situations?
I usually find myself in the situation of I don't have exactly what I need where I need it when I want it there.
Sure.
So, you know, the old adage of you can never have enough storage is pretty much true, but it's more of a balance of getting the right storage in the right place so that you've got the ability to, you know, in the case of VMware, storage vMotion workloads from one place to another and actually do a test and see if you, you know, you're getting the performance you need.
I have this love relationship with taking virtual machines and splitting them up, right? So let's say the application has these, you know, stellar requirements that are really high in the database associated with it in a virtual machine specifically. But the OS drive, not so much, right? I'll put the OS on a lower tier and put those apps on the higher tier that they need. Do you do that, and especially if that means different controllers, right? So if it might be one type of controller for that, but then one VM is split between two tiers. Do you actually get into that or stay away from it? What's your thought on that?
The only area where we actually have gotten into that is where we've pushed some, you know, we had a NAS-based appliance that's, you know, currently end of life, no longer supported. Some of the stuff we're able to move over to Isilon and just do, you know, hardware-based NAS services on it. But in other cases, there are many Active Directory forests at the university. So there's, you know, one main central forest, but a lot of schools and departments maintain their own.
Mm-hmm.
So since multi-tenancy isn't into a lot of the physical appliances today, I know it's coming, it's just not there right now. We've deployed a lot of Windows-based file sharers for, you know, SMB shares. And in those instances, we put the OS and some of the other partitions on Fibre Channel or SAS drives, but thrown the SIFS mounts of the shares over onto SATA.
Yeah.
So basically gave them the density, but not giving them performance that they're just not going to be using.
Yeah,
so,
as long as it doesn't overcomplicate your management, you know, as long as you're most appropriately using the resources for the space, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, in the case of we don't necessarily take a VM and split it across two arrays. So if we're doing like a tier one storage to part of the VM and tier three and the other part of the VM, we make sure it's serviced from the same physical array.
Okay, so from the same controller, right?
Yeah, the same controller pair. So in other words, it might be, you know, model one array has a SAS and nearline SAS pool, and then, you know, the other controller might have the Fibre Channel and the SATA storage pool. So we make sure they stay on like arrays, on the same physical array.
Gotcha.
So if you do suffer a SAN failure, an array failure on that array, you're not going to end up with like a split brain where, mm-hmm. you know, volume is just disappear from the VM.
Yeah, it doesn't do any good if you have the OS but no app, you know, or database.
Right.
Right. Yeah, so
also makes backup weird because you're backing it up and you're pulling from two different arrays.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it works. It's probably just it's harder to follow, right? Especially if you have some like, – let's just take the Veeam example, right? And let's suppose you have some storage on NFS, which I know you do, and then some on Fiber. So then, you know, Veeam has to make the best call. He's going to have some of the VM on Direct SAN, some of it on Virtual Appliance Hothead. Maybe network mode, that just gets ugly. So I don't know about ugly, it just complicates it. So I guess per VMDK we would make a decision on which the best way to go. But I don't really it's not clean.
It's more of a management issue. If you have to take down, if you're going to be doing firmware updates or controller updates on one array, if you're lucky enough to have active-active, you don't worry about it as much. But, you know, active-passive controllers, you got to be a little more cautious of it because there's sometimes a risk that it's, you know, non-disruptive upgrades don't always behave as they're supposed to.
Sure.
So you don't necessarily want half your VM disappearing. You'd rather have the whole thing go away than half of it.
As a general rule, John, when it comes to deploying new apps, what would you say is your biggest challenge in that process with between your stakeholders and also your infrastructure? What's the biggest challenge to doing that?
There are definitely still some stakeholders out there that, you know, came from deep-rooted mainframe mythology and, you know, our methodology and then evolved into the Unix sphere and figure, you know, one app, one machine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're kind of the server huggers. It takes them a while. You know, even though they're running stuff on VMs, they'll still sometimes sit there and say, well, you know, we'd really be better if we had a physical server. Mm-hmm. Even though I don't have metrics showing that is the case. It's just mindset. The majority of the enterprise systems we have today are all running virtualized, and you know, once we started getting our course management system, which we use Blackboard for the student classes, that was virtualized about 2 years ago, 100% including the Oracle database, that really was a big win, and people started actually asking for virtual machines because they're noticing, you know, oh, wow, you get high availability. Yeah, if this host fails, it's going to boot up and come up on another server, but if that physical server failed for that web tier, we'd be waiting for parts.
Yep, yep.
So a lot of that... a lot of that realization that there's a lot more benefit to virtualization and functionality, and gee, they need another web app tier. What can we do? We can clone it, make some changes, bring up another, you know, more in this tier, scale out as opposed to scaling up.
Yeah, yeah, understood. I think that we always still have to evangelize virtualization, and I think more specifically in your case, evangelize the private cloud, right? I think every one of us still have to do that today, right? There's the server huggers, the array huggers, I guess, even are out there too. So we always have to be up on that. So
yeah, and the private cloud's a big thing. In fact, I'm talking internally on that this afternoon.
I know. Yeah, I think if you guys don't know John, you know, follow what he says on Twitter. I'll put his Jay Walsh too on the podcast notes. But this guy's good, guys. I really like John. He was lucky. He was nice enough to speak at a Gartner event with us last month or in December. Good stuff. Follow him on Twitter and all of the stuff that he says. He's really ahead of us as most people. And what I mean by that is, you know, he's really pushing the edge with vCloud Director and really setting up that model for what he's doing at Northwestern. It's good stuff. So I encourage you to stay tuned to John.
Well, thank you, Rick.
No problem, man. So I want to switch over to my gimmick of the podcast, John, and you knew it was coming, so that's the good news. So I want to ask you three questions, one based in the past, one based in the present, and one looking towards the future. I'm going to start with the past. Do you have a technology story, experience, or otherwise something that would make a good story to share about anything related to technology in your past?
Sure, I could dig something up, but it's going to date me.
That's cool.
Back in the late 80s, I used to work, you know, my first technical job was in high school. I was working at Radio Shack, and I used to sell Tandy 1000 computers to people.
You didn't sell satellites and cell phones?
No, sold, it was before they had the satellites, but
joking.
Yeah, we had the brick cell phones to sell you, the old original Nokias.
Nice.
But, you know, that led into another thing. I really got into electronics. I was, you know, pre-engineering, doing electronics theory. My uncle worked at Delco Electronics, so they're doing a lot with the 6509 microprocessors, and the Tandy color computers were kind of their test bed for that work. But it, you know, it led towards an electronics path, and I ended up going into voice data communications and working at a police department doing the radio telemetry. So doing basically computers over radio. And one of the things I got involved in was a murder investigation. So this is, you know, early 90s, only tools you had for recovering data off stuff was, you know, the old original Norton tools. So one of the coolest things I did was go through some hard drives and recover files and bits and files that got used ultimately in a murder investigation.
Oh, cool. How about right now, John? What's going on in your technology practice that you have the most passion or interest for today?
I am so diverse with what I'm doing. I mean, I've got a strong passion for high-performance computing. You know, on the research scale, we're, you know, it's Linux-based physical equipment, IBM GPFS, back-end parallel file systems. But probably a little bit deeper in that is just VMware in general. Virtualization has been a huge, huge piece at the university. And over the last year, and it keeps getting deeper and deeper, is vCloud Director and just providing infrastructure as a service to give schools and departments the ability to self-provision. So instead of coming to us and asking for, you know, hey, can you give us a Red Hat VM? Here's the specs. Assign them resources that they can go self-provision on, you know, their needs, on their demands.
Outstanding.
And just that technology is just, it's going to make our life easier and empower the end user.
Yeah, I think we've really just started with the whole private cloud, and specifically with VCD. I think there's such a ramp up that's about to happen. I don't disagree with you. How about into the future, John? What do you see coming down the pike technology wise that you have the most interest for or are looking forward to longer term?
Well, I've got an interest, and I'm seeing a lot more growth and a lot more stuff headed towards the VApp route. So in other words, I think over the next several years, the whole concept of OS is going to start dying, and the whole concept of VApp and applications being deployed on a platform is going to be more of the future, more just services provided, you know, in a self-managed container. So in other words, you're not going to be deploying the OS as loading the application and going forward on that. And also have a strong interest in the storage technologies. I think we're really just on the cusp of a storage revolution. You know, SSDs kind of jumped into the market, and everyone was kind of originally treating them as just a spinning disk. But now the whole concept of, you know, SCSI Express and deduping and compressing data and solid state tiers and, you know, Tintri type functionality and VM storage appliances, I think there's going to be a revolutionary shift in how storage looks in the virtual world.
Oh, I agree. And I think that you're right that we've not even really started it yet. And on my podcast that we had last with Hans, he really kind of put me into perspective. It's like, if you're buying something today, think about it. You got 4 years, 3, 4, or 5 years on this equipment. It better have the features you need now, because it's definitely not going to be having all the features you need tomorrow. So, and features are coming out so rapidly in storage. I don't disagree with you at all.
Yeah, and everybody, the whole, you know, I think personally the whole concept of these large storage controllers is starting to disappear. It's all more modular and pod-based.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
there's going to be, you know, more disk and controller and more I think appliance-based storage. You're going to be managing more individual boxes, but it's going to be more centrally managed.
And out of that unit, that box unit, if you will, you're going to be able to drive better performance, I think, with simple tiers and, you know, easy access to solid state. I think it's really going to take off.
Right.
Where big data fits in that is yet to be determined. So
we'll see. you had to get both buzzwords in this podcast, didn't you? Big data and cloud.
But we started with cyber, so that goes a long way. So it's all good. Well, hey, John, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to talk about how you deal with app requirements. This has been a great podcast, and everyone, I do encourage you to follow John on Twitter and find him at VMworld. He's always there. Thanks again, John, for being on the show.
Thank you, Rick.